Hello. Welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This is Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting live from Portola Valley in the San Francisco Bay Area. This is my second show on Autism One. Excuse me. Too much feedback. Sorry about that. This is my second show on Autism One Radio. And as I promised last time, the subject of today's show is really a personal one. I'm going to be telling you about my own family's personal experiences with homeopathy, and in particular, the story of how my son Max recovered from autism thanks to homeopathic treatment. Now, those of you who tuned in last time know that the overall topic of this show is really homeopathy in general. But also how it can be used to treat autism in particular. And the primary focus of this show is really the content of my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. In fact, on today's show, I'm going to be reading certain passages from that book. I really strongly suggest that all of you who are interested in this show and learning more about homeopathy purchase my book. In fact, many practitioners require their patients to buy my book and read it, especially practitioners who treat autistic children. So it's a general introduction to homeopathy, but it also contains many first-person cure stories, including the story about my son Max. You can find out how to order my book by going to the book website, which is www.impossiblecure.com. And basically, you can find out there how to order the book, which is at Amazon, or from you can call one of the homeopathic booksellers. You might also be interested to know that a German translation of Impossible Cure is coming out this summer, published by Random House Germany. So those of you who have family in Germany might be interested in telling them about this German translation of the book. Also at impossiblecure.com, you'll find more information about autism treatment and referrals, pointers to referrals to practitioners. During this show, you can also send me an email. I'm going to be monitoring my email. I just tested alansky at autismone.org, and for some reason, it's not coming into me. So I recommend sending an email to Lansky, L-A-N-S-K-Y, at impossiblecure.com. In fact, you can email me questions really anytime, and I'll either respond to you directly, you know, then or on the show. I have a lot to cover, though, today on this show, so I'm hoping I will have time for questions. In fact, there's no show after this one, so I'm happy to go on longer afterwards and answer questions that come in during the show. Just to let you know what's coming up, on March 18th is my next show. But I'm going to actually be flying. I'm going to be in the air that day, so I will be taping that show in advance. But I can answer questions that come in before the show. That show will focus on a general introduction to homeopathic philosophy, basically how homeopaths view illness, why we become sick the way we do, what a real cure looks like or healing should look like, and in particular, the dangers of suppressive drugs, drugs that just mask symptoms, may look like they're curing you, but may actually be making you sicker in the long run. So that will be the subject of next time's show. It's very important to understand those principles if you're interested in homeopathic treatment. April's show will showcase specifically ideas about homeopathic treatment of autism. It's going to be based on a talk I'm giving in April at the National Center for Homeopathy Conference in Orlando. The conference runs April 6th through 12th, and my talk is part of a panel on homeopathic treatment of autism, which takes place first thing Sunday morning, April 10th. That's in Orlando at the Wyndham Resort. I also encourage all of you interested in homeopathy to join the National Center for Homeopathy. They have a fantastic magazine that comes out six times a year, and it's just really the organization that promotes and supports homeopathy in this country. And a yearly membership, which includes the magazine and lots of other things on the web, is only $55 a year. And you can find out more at www.homeopathic.org. In my May show, I hope to actually interview a leading homeopath who's active in autism treatment. But for now, it's time to cut to the chase and really get to the story of how I myself came to find out about homeopathy and how it changed the life of my entire family, especially my son Max. Max is now 13 and a half. And you would never suspect that he once was autistic. He is in eighth grade. He's an A student mostly, occasional B's, very sociable, extremely creative, a fantastic artist, which as we all know is very common in the autism population. He particularly is into doing comics. He's a comedian himself, and he even has a girlfriend. He's a real teenager at this point. He goes away to month-long sleepaway camps in the summer. He has no food restrictions at all. And he sees our homeopath only on an as-needed basis like the rest of our family. So how did we get there? Well, it's really been a 10-year journey. In fact, as my husband reminded me many times during that journey, our homeopath told us right from the start that this would take us 10 years. Well, it took a bit less than 10 years. Homeopathic treatment began in 1995, exactly 10 years ago from now, really. And I think we got really 80% of the way there, 80% improvement in the first 2 years of treatment. But the remaining 20% was a slow, gradual process that took several years. And this case, I want to point out, was really an optimal cure case. Really, very few people will have that kind of result, although it does happen. But this underscores a very important point, that homeopathic treatment requires a lot of patience on your part and a lot of participation on your part. The homeopath relies completely on good information and cooperation from you. It's also important to know that what I'm talking about on this show and what I advocate and what we used with my son was classical homeopathic treatment. That means use of single remedies chosen based on the symptoms described to the homeopath, not combination remedies, not fixed regimens of remedies given in a sort of pre-designed way, not based on use of machines that test test the body in some way, which, as far as I know, cannot really determine what remedy should be used. So that is what my book is about, and that is what I advocate for autism treatment. I know there's many other approaches. Some of them can be integrated into classical homeopathic treatment, and I will be talking about that on later shows, but classical homeopathy is what brought my son all the way. So I'm going to read a little now from the beginning, from my book, which talks about the beginning when we first began to realize Max was autistic. It all began in the spring of 1994 when Max was 2.5 years old. Something wasn't right. He wasn't talking. Although he had about 10, maybe 20 words in his vocabulary, most of the time he didn't seem to understand language at all, and it was getting worse. On some level, he seemed to be slowly drifting away. On the bright side, Max did know all the letters of the alphabet and his numbers 1 to 10. He could stack blocks with amazing dexterity and could build highly intricate and perfectly symmetric structures. He even knew his way around the computer, pointing and clicking, dragging the mouse, opening games. And he displayed some amazingly advanced analytical skills. For instance, he could play a concentration-style game, matching pairs of overturned tiles in a 4x5 grid, better than we could. We knew he could hear. He enjoyed television and danced rhythmically to music. In fact, for the most part, Max was a happy, though distant, toddler at home. He usually had a smile on his face, and he liked to play with his older brother, Isaac, a precocious and mature 5-year-old. But when we all sat around laughing and talking on weekends, Max would prefer to be off on his own. He'd watch TV, play with the computer, stack his blocks, and retreat. He also wasn't as affectionate as Isaac. Although he didn't push us away, he never reached out for affection. For a long time, I thought, oh, he's just late to speak. He's more self-contained, a more private person than Isaac. But it was more than that. At school, problems began to emerge. I began to sense that the teachers at his preschool were concerned. They greeted Max each morning with a kind of hesitancy. Although he had started the school year exuberantly at age 2, he never fully settled in. He would rely on his beloved Baba, a bottle of milk, for comfort. And though he enjoyed many of the toys in the classroom, Max never interacted with any of the other children. He was unable to sit through story time. He was antsy, as if there was a motor running inside him. But it wasn't like classic hyperactivity. He didn't run around. He just wasn't there. It was as if the story was reading was in a foreign language. Left to his own devices, he'd just wander away and play quietly with toys that interested him. He wasn't disruptive. He just wasn't there. When the children were outside playing, the teachers found him in a classroom, raptly staring at some animal in a cage or at a toy. I knew one of the teachers suspected autism. She told me that Max manifested self-stimulation activities, like spinning in a circle, and that he didn't have good eye contact when spoken to, but I didn't want to believe it. He did have some eye contact with us at home. He didn't really spin around at home either. But increasingly, there were noticeable oddities. One morning, while I was driving him to school, I asked, "Do you know where we're going now?" No response. Max just stared into space. At night, when I tried to read a story to him, he could not sit quietly. He would fidget and squirm all over the bed. He'd stand on his head with his feet against the wall or run his fingers up and down things, the table, the wall. I noticed that he had the habit of poking his finger against people's chests or butting his head against them, not to hurt them, but as a kind of contact. Over a year later, I learned that these behaviors are all characteristic of autistic children. What to do? I began to grasp at straws. Perhaps it was ADD. I read all the books. Perhaps it was the teacher, that they didn't understand him. But deep down, I knew Max had a serious problem, and it was getting worse. He was growing more distant, more disconnected. By the end of the school year, just before Max turned 3, the preschool called us in for a conference and advised us to seek medical help. One teacher confided to us, "Max will never be able to attend the private school that Isaac goes to. He will always need special education." And so our family embarked on a quest. I knew that we would never rest easy as long as Max had a problem like this. I knew that all of our lives would be severely affected, and I felt instinctively that Max's entire future hung in the balance. Well, many of you are familiar with this story, I know. It's one that's probably rings a bell with many of you. My worst fear was coming true at that point. My brother is a schizophrenic, so I know what it meant. I knew what it meant to have a child with lifelong problems. I knew what it meant to look at institutionalization. And it really made me determined not to ignore it, to devote myself to Humax's cure, like many of us mothers did. And I knew that everything I devoted at now to his treatment would pay off later. So I started searching. On the advice of a friend of mine, I avoided allopathic labeling for Max and just took him to the speech and language therapist, Donna Daganis, who was really the best speech and language therapist in the Palo Alto area where I live. And she signed him up for 2 sessions a week, one on his own and one with 2 other boys. One had already been diagnosed PDD. Another one, I'm not sure what his diagnosis was, but Max was definitely the most sort of spaced out of the 3 of them and the least verbal. Then I started looking at diet. Now, this was 10 years ago, before the autism movement and treatments really, you know, exploded. And so I was just looking around. I read about the Feingold diet, and I eliminated milk, because that really rang a bell. As I mentioned, Max was addicted to his bottle and would drink almost a half a gallon of milk a day, cow's milk. So we eliminated the cow's milk, simply drinking the milk, and replaced it with 1 cup of goat's milk a day. And then we also began to avoid food coloring. Many months later, actually, I also removed corn cereals from his diet. So we never did a huge dietary change, like a complete gluten-free, casein-free diet. We just simply removed all that milk he was drinking. We didn't remove cheese or other things, although we didn't eat a lot of cheese. and try to avoid food colorings. And we really noticed a change at that point. It was like a veil lifted. And he began talking like two-word sentences. But he still had an autistic style, like echolalia. The fall of 1994, he was tested by Donna, and he tested and became eligible for state benefits. And he was testing, I think, at the 5th percentile, something like that. I also, on her advice, enrolled him in a Montessori school. And at the time, we also got a new nanny. And I read the Sunrise books, and we really focused with the nanny on focusing on Max, giving him a lot of intense focus. Well, about 3 months after this point, he was making very slow progress with the speech and language therapy. And then I found out about homeopathy. So I'm going to read a little bit from my book now about that. Okay. It was now January of 1995. Curled up in bed, I was reading the latest issue of Mothering, a progressive parenting magazine. It had an article by Judith Reichenberg-Ullman about homeopathy for childhood behavioral problems. She claimed that she was able to create substantial improvement in ADD cases 70% of the time. Back then, I didn't know anything about homeopathy, although I'd read Deepak Chopra's books about alternative methods of healing and knew a bit about Ayurveda, Qigong, etc. I thought, like most people, that homeopathy was some kind of herbal medicine. I'd taken some over-the-counter homeopathic remedies for colds, but I didn't know anything about homeopathy, really. As I read Reichenberg-Ullman's article that evening, I was filled with an increasing fascination and excitement. I'll never forget the moment I finished reading it. A bell went off in my head. I knew that something important had happened. Little did I know that our lives were about to change forever. "Read this," I said to Steve. That's my husband. The next morning, I called an acupuncturist friend of mine and asked her where could I find a homeopath. She referred me to John Melnichuk, a professional homeopath new to the Palo Alto area. We quickly got an appointment and went with high hopes and expectations. So, basically, that first appointment with John, it was a classical homeopathic intake. I think we talked to him for about an hour and a half. And he selected a remedy for Max based on his individual characteristics. Now, there's many remedies that are used successfully to treat autism, and I do monitor many cases. And as I said before, classical treatment is based on one remedy chosen based on the symptoms. I mean, over time, this remedy can be changed, but a classical homeopath will only give one remedy at a time, and it's based on the symptoms of the patient. In Max's case, some of the symptoms that stood out that determined the remedy he was given were his aggravation and also craving for milk, the fact that he enjoyed dancing and music and animals, the fact that he had a very sweaty head when he slept, and he slept in a position lying on his back with his hands over the top of his head, not on his head, but over the top. In fact, I often used this as a cue over the years for when he needed this remedy. And this position did go away after he stopped being autistic. He was also very restless and intense. There's also my family history. On my husband's side of the family, there was a very strong tendency for cancer and diabetes. And both my husband and I had mononucleosis. And of course, my brother's schizophrenia as well on my side of the family. Max also was tended to be perfectionistic, but sweet, sort of stubborn and sweet at the same time. Another keynote of the remedy he was given was that his eyes, the whites of his eyes, are super white. They're almost bluish. So that's another characteristic of this remedy. And he also had many brown macules, like big freckles, and what they call a cafe au lait complexion, a slightly, darker complexion. Another thing I had said over and over, I guess, in that first intake was that he was very talented, which he was, and which he still is. And apparently this was one of the remedies associated with that, with being an extremely talented person. And the remedy's name is carcinosin. John recommended LM dosing. Over time, I'll explain. If you get my book, you'll understand what that means. But it's basically a water-based dosing where the white little white pills of homeopathy are dissolved in water, it's given to you in a bottle. You shake it up and you give 1 teaspoon daily. So now I'm going to talk about Max's first response to this remedy. Reading from my book again. Okay. Hold on. All right. Max began taking his remedy on a Thursday morning. John had recommended a liquid dosing regimen, a kind of slow and steady approach, where a small amount of remedy diluted in water is given on a regular basis. In Max's case, we gave him a teaspoon each morning. Each time we gave him a dose, we also tried to imbue it with our love and good intentions. 2 days later, Steve and I began to notice some changes. Max was using some phrases he had never used before and was somehow a bit more socially aware. It was subtle, but something had definitely shifted. We also noticed that his speech was slightly more fluid. Usually he spoke in a kind of cogwheel fashion, as if he had to think about each word he said. Over time, we found that noticeable and sudden improvements in speech and social awareness became Max's earmark for the effects of the remedy upon him. The following Tuesday, 5 days after starting the remedy, Max had a session with his therapist, Donna. We did not tell her about the remedy, but she quickly noticed that something had changed. "What did you do?" she asked. One of Max's exercises was to try to follow a list of instructions, such as, "Put the ball on the red chair and bring the green block to me." Usually he was able to follow only a single command, rarely two. Suddenly he was able to perform two commands consistently. And the trend continued. Each day we saw just a bit more improvement. As time went by, we went through successively increased potencies of the remedy, and we began to see a definite pattern of response. A bottle of the remedy usually took a month to finish. When we began a new bottle containing a slightly higher potency, Max would show some increased signs of hyperactivity. These aggravations weren't extreme, but were noticeable to me and Donna. That period would usually last 3 to 5 days, and it was followed by a sudden jump in verbal, cognitive, and social ability, a discrete and noticeable step upward. At this point, the hyperactivity would also tone down. Max would become more contained and relaxed. That was followed by a period of gradual improvement for about 2 weeks. At the end of the month, though, as we neared the end of the bottle, we would begin to see a gradually slipping backward. This heralded the need to move on to the next potency. After a few months, the changes in Max had become quite noticeable. However, being scientists, Steve and I were naturally a bit skeptical about the whole affair. Was it the remedy that was changing Max? Was it our own expectations and attitudes? We decided to conduct a simple and admittedly not totally rigorous test. For 2 days, I would make daily observations about Max and write them down. Steve would give Max his morning dose, changing from one potency or bottle to the next one at a time unknown to me. The bottle would be hidden. Truthfully, I expected Steve to change bottles fairly early on in the 2-week period. Each day, I made my observations and jotted them down, straining to see a sudden shift, but seeing none. However, on the second to last day of the experiment, it happened. I noticed a sudden improvement in Max's speech. And indeed, Steve had changed the bottle 3 days earlier. So, let me go back to my notes here. Well, Max ended up staying on the carcinosin, as I described, for a year. And also, I would like to let you know some other things that we did along the way. When he was around 6 months, at age 4, we took him for classical osteopathic treatment. That was in the summer of 1995. And it really did make a noticeable impact on him. It was right after that day, first day of his first osteopathic treatment, that he came into got in my lap and said, "Mommy, sing me Rockabye Baby." So it was like the first time he had come to me and asked me for that kind of affection. And really, after that point, he always did. So I really credit the osteopathy for making a shift of that kind, although it was the homeopathy that changed his whole interaction with us, the speech, the social awareness, all of that. Over the course of the next couple of years, he did have, I think he went to the osteopath maybe 6 times, something like that. In the fall of 1995, he had progressed so far Donna, the therapist, said, "Well, I don't need to treat him anymore," but she kept him on the books for special education. It was also at that point he was so getting, you know, really coming out socially, but the school he had been in, the Montessori school, were not helpful because he was a bit awkward socially. He was really trying to reach out, but he would often, you know, cry when he didn't get his way or use toilet talk. And I remember the teacher said to me, this older woman said, "Oh, Max was such a nice boy, quiet boy before. Can you put him back the way he was?" Well, I was aghast. I realized, oh, time to change schools. So in the middle of the school year, I changed him to a new Montessori school, and they just totally helped him adjust, and he fit right in. And by the end of the school year, he really had lots of friends, and he was having play dates. So that was really great. I remember how happy I was when a child would run up to him and greet him when I brought him in, instead of him being very withdrawn. Over the following year, I also over many years, I would go into his room occasionally and do Reiki on him. I've learned that myself, so while he was sleeping, I would do Reiki on him. And I really do think that boosts the effects of the homeopathic remedies, and prayer, too. I did lots of praying. Anyway, so it's about a year later now. So Max is 4 and a half. And at that point, we decided to stop the homeopathic remedy. He was being aggravated by it more than helped. And this is actually the sign in this kind of dosing that it's time to stop. We stopped the remedy, and he just had a huge jump in improvement at that point. And he was tested about at age 5, and he was testing above age level. And he was taken off the books for special education. But about a month after that, I really started noticing a slight decline in his language. And we also took him at that time for his 5-year-old checkup. Now, I knew not to give him the vaccinations, but the pediatrician convinced me to have him take a TB test, which in California is an injection. And he started to relapse at that point. He just was crying. He was just not his normal self. All the teachers were concerned. And so we started back on the carcinosin. And he quickly came out of that relapse. But since I had noticed him declining at that point, we stayed on it. And he actually stayed on the carcinosin again for another 7 months. So basically, he was on that remedy in the end for about 2 years, with that 6-month break in there in the middle. And after that point, he has never had really taken that remedy again, has never had to take daily doses. He just takes dry pills, like in C potencies, if those of you know homeopathy. And really, it was a matter of a constitutional treatment at that point. So I also wanted to tell you about his progress over the years. Now, this is very typical from what I've heard from homeopaths who treat autistic children, that after the children leave the autism behind, they are not autistic anymore, but they may have some learning disabilities. Well, when he was around in second grade, the teachers started reporting back to us that although they did not really know what was up, what his history was, until I told them, actually, after they were reporting back to us. But although his affect was like completely normal, he would miss information in class. So or oral information. So if they were reading a story to him and told them to write a little, you know, a response, to write an essay about it, he might write about the wrong subject, not get the instructions, or just miss a sort of a key point in the story that had been read orally. So at that point, I told him about his history. Actually, teachers have always been incredulous when I told them his history. And then they would be better about giving him written instructions. But at that point, we also changed the remedy Those problems were there. I had him actually tested. He tested sort of indefinitely for some auditory processing things. It was nebulous. But we changed the remedy at that point, and actually within a year or so, all those problems were gone. So by fourth grade, certainly, no, I had never had any report back from the teacher about any problem whatsoever. Also, an interesting thing that came up in the summer of 1998. So I guess Max was 7 at that point. A mysterious measles-like rash came out on his chest. I often thought that maybe this was the measles vaccine sort of expressing itself or finally coming out, the measles coming out of him. It wasn't exactly measles, but it was strange. And that disappeared after a while, you know, after a couple months, actually, it was there, just on his chest. So basically, by the time Max was in fourth or fifth grade, it was over. I mean, I would say he was completely cured. Maybe there was tiny residual oddities. I don't know. They're very subtle. Nobody would notice them except me. But now, today, I feel like they're all gone. I'm running out of time here, but I'm going to keep going for another couple minutes. And just summarize. So, and many of the things I've discussed today, I'll repeat many of these points over the coming months on this show. But the main points I want you to take away with you are these. First of all, be patient. When I monitor these cases, one of the biggest problems parents have is they want to see immediate changes. And even in Max's case, the change was subtle and slow. And this was an optimal case. It was a slow, gradual process with ups and downs and bumps along the way. You've got to look at the treatment of your child in the large. Are you seeing improvement over the course of months? Sometimes it's good to use a journal and keep tabs on it. How is your child now compared to how they were 3 months ago? So don't be impatient. And often the food sensitivities in particular are the last ones to go. So be patient with that. Second, work with your homeopath. You've got to be really observant. Your input is their main information, not any kind of tests for metals or anything like that. Homeopath picks the remedy based on the symptoms of the child. Those tests can be helpful. Sometimes you will give, let's say, a metal remedy in potency, but generally not in classical treatment. It's also important to be familiar with homeopathy so that you understand the process, and that's why homeopaths often even require people to buy my book. Another really important thing to successful homeopathic treatment is the mental health of your family. Homeopaths have noticed that families that are successful are often those that can provide a really nurturing environment for the child to recover into, to motivate them to recover into. If there's a lot of family discord, it just makes it harder for the child to recover in that environment. And another, for that reason as well, it is really best if everybody in the family is undergoing homeopathic treatment. And that was certainly true of my family. We all started going to the homeopath once Max did. And I got to tell you, since that time, I mean, I don't think anybody in my family has taken an antibiotic in 10 years or hardly any allopathic medication, even over-the-counter medicine. My other advice is to find an experienced classical homeopath, preferably somebody with experience in treating autism. And if you go to my website, you'll get some guidance there on referrals. The other thing I'm going to suggest is that be very cautious about introducing new treatments or methods. Introduce them certainly one at a time. Only use something if it's really working. Don't try to do everything at once. This is something a lot of parents do. It sort of creates chaos in a way, certainly for the homeopath, because they can't figure out what is going on. So that is another recommendation. And my final thing I want to say is that you've got to accommodate to changes as they happen in your child. In Max's case, for example, once he started coming out of his state, we needed to change schools. We needed to find a new nanny. Or actually, at one point, we just stopped using nannies altogether. We decided that wasn't productive for our family. You need to change what behavioral therapies you're using based depending on how the kid's progressing. If they're going beyond, let's say, ABA treatment, you've got to try some other kind of behavioral therapy. So you really have got to change as the child changes. And the same is true for you if you undergo homeopathic treatment. You've got to make changes as you change and improve. So that's about all I want to say today. I don't have any emails coming in, no questions. I know I've gone over by about 5 minutes, but I want to thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you'll join me with my next installment of There's Hope with Homeopathy, because there is, not just for your autistic child, but for your whole family. So thank you for listening, and I'll be talking to you on, I think it's in March. Okay, thank you.